Let me just quickly pee and then I'll come back and tell that story.
I think I would hang out with Joe Exotic.
If you believe that, you're an idiot.
AFI.
Carol fucking Baskin!
Backstage Stories.
Well, Mo, it's been another ridiculously long but strangely short week in quarantine. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. For the first time in 6 friggin' weeks, I'm here since 6 weeks, just realized that yesterday. And for the first time, I got all my equipment, my audio equipment, which I need for work, set up in a way that it just does what it's supposed to do. So it's running now.
That took you 6 weeks. It took you 6 weeks to do it.
Yeah, you know, I borrowed different devices from our friend Tim, who has the studio.
Yeah.
And none of those things worked in a correct way with my computer. And now I ordered my own audio interface, and I actually love it. And I've never been a techie. But I am in this moment because I'm just in love with this little piece of gear that works for me and does what it's supposed to do. It's strange, but that's my
dude.
That's the stage of quarantine mood I'm in now.
The best, honestly though, even not in quarantine, one of the best feelings in the world is when you get a very small but highly essential piece of technology and it just works.
Yeah,
you know. You know, you don't have to get an update yet, or you don't have to like order some battery or some cable, or like you look at a YouTube video for how to get it set up, but you just, it just works, and it's just such a nice feeling.
Yeah, you just plug it in and it works.
It happens so often when I try to get some pedal or some little knickknack or some techie nerdy thing, and it just sits on my desk for months because I don't have this drive to figure out what's that small little thing that I need to get, or I get lazy.
Yeah. Plus, I've watched all episodes of Tiger King. Gotta admit, the episode 8, the kind of what happened afterwards episode where they do the Skype interviews.
Yeah.
I fell asleep during this one, but I watched the 7 episodes that matter.
Man. Honestly, yeah, I think the least important episode is probably the very, very last one, because that's, I mean, for those who haven't watched it, what are you doing? Honestly, you're just at home, go watch it. But it's the last episode is kind of all very Googleable things that you could figure out are going on now. I mean, the last episode is kind of like, look, this is what's happening now, and the juicy stuff you just saw was the reason why this is happening now. So you saw all the really good stuff. What did you think about it? Did you, when you watched it, like for example, a friend of mine watched it and they turned it off after one or two episodes because it's someone from Germany, and they said that they actually couldn't believe, like genuinely couldn't believe that the people were real, that the story was actually happening, and that any of these people are actually real people. I was like, no, that's real America. That exists. Absolutely tenfold, 100%. And they were like, if you believe that, you're an idiot. And I was like, I mean, of course some things are staged. It is reality TV in a way, but that what's happening, like the people are real people.
And
what do you think about it?
Yeah, that's a point I had a long conversation about with Tony, my girlfriend, because she has her kind of problems in that direction with the series. And I actually think it's really, it fucks you up in a very strange way. It's kind of disturbing in many scenes. But for me, it's regarding it from a point of view regarding the movie makers, the documentarians, it's a great job, because I've never seen a documentary that felt so staged and so fictionary.
It's like,
it's
a fairy
great
tale.
Storytelling for me, and
it's extremely good. I mean, the way they arranged it, the way they cut it all together, the way they build each episode into a different arc, kind of, another friend of mine from America watched it, and I think he referenced it kind of like, you know, when you're driving past a car accident on the highway, and you know that you shouldn't look, but it's so wrong and so visceral and such an urge that you have to slow down, and you just stare, and you don't want to see a body, but you kind of do in a way. It's kind of like some sort of dumpster fire, strange, dark addiction thing. It's great though. I mean, it's a really fun show.
Yeah, and I watched the last two episodes twice because I was faster than Tony, and so she watched the last two episodes and I watched it again with her.
Yeah.
And it's been even better because I don't wanna spoil anybody, but the events that take place within the last two episodes, you see them from another point of view when you know how it's gonna end, and it was quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Do you feel like, despite all the ridiculous, or let's ask this, like, despite the ridiculous shit that Joe Exotic did, do you still think that you would rather, if you had to choose to hang out with him for a weekend, or
Carol fucking Baskin? Baskin?
No, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I think I would hang out with Joe Exotic.
He's just more interesting, right? He'll get you drunk, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And if you're straight, he'll turn you gay. That's what I want to say.
Eventually, he'll marry you.
Yeah, man. You know, all you need is a little bit of meth and a little bit of hope. And apparently, I was listening to Tom Segura on his podcast talk about talk about their reasoning, like Joe Exotic's reasoning for how he turned Travis gay. And his whole thing was like, well, do you watch porn? And then Travis is like, yeah. And he's like, well, when you're watching it, do you like to see the dude with the big one doing her or the guy with the little one doing her? And he was like, well, obviously you want to see the guy with the big one. And he's like, well, you ain't all that straight. And it's like, okay. he really locked him down with that logic. I mean, who doesn't? It's so insane. It's so insane to use that.
You're very
logic,
good at beaming his voice. But
oh man, you know, well, the Wondery, this amazing podcast organization, I don't know if you've heard it yet, but they released a 6-episode saga about Joe Exotic.
Ooh.
Like right around the same time Netflix released their show.
You gotta send me this.
It's really good. The host is really good, it's really well crafted. It's the only shame is that it's not longer. It's only 6 episodes. There's a few bonuses in between. But it covers the story from a slightly different angle. And it covers more information. So there's some things in the podcast that are not in the show, which is really cool. But there's a great bit, I think in the first episode, where they talk about how Joe was doing magic before he bought tigers. Like, basically doing magic shows led to him owning a tiger in a way. And the guy who assisted him was so funny. He was like, just because you referenced his voice, he's like, can you imagine this guy being a stage performer or an entertainer? I mean, you see the curtain open, this guy walks out and he looks exciting. You know, maybe he has like a very explosive or colorful suit on. But then, you know, instead of hearing like, ladies and gentlemen, you get like, hey, y'all doing out there? Ladies and gentlemen, oh, yeah, this is me. I'm going to make some magic fire. Yeah, it's unbelievable, and he's totally right.
I got two more points. First, what I learned through the Tiger King is Oklahoma is not a place where you want to live. That's what I realized.
No.
And the second one is a question for
not
you.
Not at all.
Who, for you, who's the weirdest character in Tiger King besides Joe Exotic?
Jesus Christ. Well, the person that really stuck out the most to me, someone who I could easily have nightmares about forever, is what's his name? Bhagavan Doc Antle.
Same for me.
This guy, dude, he's so creepy. I mean, he has this enormous cult,
and he still runs it.
He's still doing it. Yeah, he's still doing it. He's definitely doing cub petting. He's definitely killing off these tigers. It's so clear. It's so crazy. And he's just this, like, you know, he had this hyper overconfidence about him. Do you realize, you remember that? Like, he spoke in this way of like, I am the second coming of Christ and you're welcome.
Yeah.
You know, he had this total personality that just turns me off so much.
You can see it within his title.
He just lounged around riding elephants.
What you said, you can see it within his title.
In his title?
Or what it is.
Yeah, and doesn't it translate to like Lord?
Yeah, something like that. Or
it's unbelievable. Yeah. I think the really cool woman that they interviewed who left the cult.
She explains it.
And she was the one. Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, man. I was so glad they got some woman from inside to talk about the experience. And they're like, and he like lures in these young girls. And I think he does kind of like a Harvey Weinstein thing where he kind of convinces them that this is the normal thing. And if they want to live this exotic life that, you know, of glamour and tigers and whatever, this is the way to become the star is to have sex with this big old sloppy seal. Man, he's just such a nasty looking guy. And, you know, there's like that moment where he's being interviewed and he's wearing these like fisherman's shirts and he's holding the tiger chain and he's talking to the camera and then the chain slips and it stains his shirt kind of. And then he like barks at the woman and he's like, well, I guess the chain wasn't cleaned properly. So I've ruined this shirt.
Yeah, he's so weird.
And you're like, he's going to fucking put that lady in a basement and shut the door later. He's not going to let her out. You know? It's so crazy.
And what's weird, I've seen the Instagram account of Joe Exotic's newest husband, I guess Dylan is his name. Used to hang out with Doc Antle before meeting Joe Exotic and still does.
Really? Really?
As far as Instagram and the dates of the posts tell me.
I hope you're faithful, Dylan. The last thing Joe needs right now is a cheater. Come on, man. Not with Doc. He's a greasy... He's such a tube of mayonnaise. Yeah. Come on. What a fucking ball of...
But do you know what's the difference between Germany and America?
I'm dying to know the answer to this.
I thought about this because I was thinking about police a lot after our last conversation. And in Germany, they would have got, before this whole TV show, if this all would have taken place and if having tigers would be legal, even then, before this TV show would have been released, they would have arrested Doc Antle, they would have arrested Carol Baskin, they would have arrested Joe Exotic, and none of this could have happened because they're fucking strict.
Man, yeah. Yeah, these people would not, I mean, the craziness within them would still exist and it would boil up and come out in these weird ways as it does from some, you know, constricted people, but this particular lifestyle would not be allowed for sure. It's unbelievable to see it. You know, and it just like when I've been living in Germany for 4 years now. And like when I watch things like the Tiger King, there's a part of me that like occasionally remembers a life where that sort of thing wasn't so unbelievable. And also like there's one foot in that where I go like, but I know people like, you know, this helper with no legs, the guy, or the janitor guy who just with blonde hair who's like, I don't give a fuck, you know. Like I know people like that too. And then the other foot of mine is here watching it, you know, like with German eyes, kind of being like, these people need to be put away. Like this can't be real. This is so like gross. I don't know.
Yeah, what distracts me the most from a German point of view and the system I'm living in is the fact that after this whole show, nothing happened. They do this 8th episode where they interview all of the participants in this plot a few months after the whole all of these events took place, and nothing happened to them. How can Doc Antle still be doing his thing? How can Carol Baskin still run her big cat rescue? And I'm like, what the fuck? What is what is happening there? How could it be system wise?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, man. I think these guys are really, really playing the game to the best of their ability. Like, Joe got sloppy. Joe was like openly asking people to murder another person, and it was so clear and so obvious, and you didn't even need this like jet ski, like Cartman looking motherfucker to go undercover or whatever, you know, like
you know, that's like, exactly it. Have you seen,
it looks like Cartman got old.
Have you seen this meme I had in my Instagram story with him?
I don't remember. What,
wait a
what
second,
was it?
I have to find it. It's super funny because obviously there are many Tiger King meme pages now since the release of the
God,
show.
Oh, yeah. And it's candy. It's candy. It's perfect.
Pure comedy gold. And there's a meme.
While you look that up, I'll just explain. I think that with the people who aren't Joe, like he got so sloppy, and I think the other people have played, like Jeff Lowe, I think for some reason, just the way he plays this game or the way he dealt with like the lawsuits and stuff, he just plays the loophole just enough, and maybe he'll get busted and go to jail someday. I think Jeff Lowe would be next, but with Carol Baskin, I don't think she's ever going to be put away unless they find Don Lewis's bones in the tiger shit or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, she's got, I mean, Don or no, Howard, her new guy, who is a whole different conversation of insanity. You know, he has an MBA from Harvard. He has a master's degree in business from Harvard. So, like, no wonder he was so clever with busting down these idiots in Oklahoma. What's the meme?
You remembered Howard? There's also a lot of memes with him, but the meme, I totally lost it. It was a screenshot of the Cartman-looking guy explaining something in his interview in this kind of garage or where he sits, you know, in this red t-shirt with the subtitles.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the meme says, when your stoner roommate refuses to do their dishes. And then there's the subtitles, so I signed up to be a confidential informant.
So I signed up to be a confidential informant.
And there's also another I love that. Super... That's I so gotta good. Send you some of those, and maybe we can share some of them with the Artsy Farts Immigrants account. There's also, do you remember this image of Howard and Carol Baskin, where he has this?
How could this I kind forget, of, man? The wedding photo.
Yeah, the
photo.
Wedding photo, and it says, "When the pussy's bomb and you don't want to get fed to the tigers," and then you see him.
So
woo!
That's
but enough
so good,
about
man. The most yeah? like
sorry.
The last thing. I just had to say, like, the most disgusting thing I've ever heard another human being say ever was when Jeff Lowe was sitting there with his, I think it was his girlfriend
wife.
Or his wife at the time, Laura or Lauren with the red hair, and he's holding a pet cub, and they're talking about how they would take the cubs to these hotel rooms and like get all these girls to want to come in and take the photos and like pay all the money. And they explain the whole process. And then Jeff Lowe, he just sounds like he's just like salivating to say this, but he's kind of like, you know what they say, a little pussy gets you a lot of pussy. And you just see, like, even the wife, like, the whole mood is kind of like,
I found it even worse when he talked about the nanny they would get because his wife was pregnant.
And she's like, what, 14? I mean, this guy's so gross.
But guys,
so, gross,
so you got to see The Tiger King. Let's leave that topic, but I got one last thing I wanted to ask. If you've listened to the podcast, do you know the podcast Reply All by Gimlet?
Yes, I was just shown that a month ago. I think it's great.
And have you heard this one particular episode, number 158, the case of the missing hit? Some newspapers like The Guardian headlined, "This could be the greatest podcast episode ever." And have you listened to it?
That was the first one I heard, yeah, because someone told me to check out that episode. That was the first one. And man, it's great storytelling. It's really great.
It's super amazing. To anyone who's not listened to this yet, we can recommend this, even if Gimlet is a big player and a big commercial player. They've been sold to Spotify for $230 million last year.
Wait. Spotify bought Gimlet for $230 yes. million? Dollars? Oof. That's a lot of cheese. But even though they are a humongous corporation now, yes, we can't recommend that enough. Reply All's Case of the Missing Hit. And I have to thank my friend Lindsay for suggesting that to me. That was a really good show. Now, my only thought actually about the... I haven't heard that many episodes, so I forget the name of the two hosts. I think it's Andrew and something. But I listened to maybe 8 or 9 episodes of their show, which, to be fair, you know, they have over 150 episodes, so you can't really gauge too much from just a few episodes. But I have this weird feeling about, like, sometimes they bicker, like they argue with each other, and sometimes it genuinely, to my innocent ears, really sounds like they don't like each other. And sometimes I get it in my head where I'm listening, I'm like, these guys fucking hate each other. What are they doing on here? Like, is it for the money, or are they strapped down to the show now? Like, why are they doing it? Why don't they do something else? And I mean, the bickering is like so harsh sometimes. Yeah. I don't know if anyone else
listeners
feels that
don't
way,
imagine Jordan and me being friends aside of this podcast.
You gotta keep business separate, man. You gotta keep it separate. Oh man. But yeah, that's a really cool one. They had a couple of different really special, like, just the concept of their show is really cool. But not to recommend another podcast for no money much longer. I was just thinking, like, you know, you grew up in the south part of Germany and I grew up in the south part of America, but we both when times are normal are living in Munich. But you didn't grow up in Munich. So actually, since I'm stuck here and I'm just now I'm back actually in Munich, and today was my first time, you know, taking a small step out of the door and kind of like getting some sunlight and just noticing how the conditions are here for since COVID-19 took over. I was just thinking to myself, like, I wonder what it was like to come to a city like this as a German boy. Like, do you remember, like, one of your first trips to Munich, like, as a kid? Was it like a special event?
Let me think. I can tell you one thing that most of my friends, as you gotta know, Oberstdorf, where I'm at the moment, where my parents lived, where I grew up, is not that far away from Munich. It's like 200 kilometers, something like that. And most of my friends have been to Munich on a regular basis every now and then, and I have not done this as a kid. I don't know why, but I had family-wise some connection to other cities like Augsburg, but I've not been to Munich that many times. So it was something special moving there, because it was so close but still such an unknown place for me. But as a kid, I remember a few times I've been there, but in occasions like being invited to see a soccer match together with my dad or something like that, and you wouldn't actually see that much of the city, and not even get a little blink of what life there could be.
Did you really not, I guess you really never moved here until after you finished gymnasium, right? After you finished high school.
Yeah. I moved to Munich, I think, 2 months after my degree. And it was wild for me.
Really? What was the feeling like when you find, like, you settle into the big city and you're like, okay, all right, time's up, let's do it.
It was super weird in a way, because I gotta say, I had a phase where I actually did know what to do after high school, and I don't know if I have to explain the educational system of Germany, but
I think we've covered that before,
but there's not this gap between college and university. It's kind of the same thing. It's just university, and I didn't know what to do. And then somehow I was like, yeah, let's just move somewhere. And I didn't want to move that far at that point, because at that point I was still very very Oberstdorf bound, and my life was taking place there. So in the first month, when I after I moved to Munich, I would ride home every weekend, which I don't do now. It happens that I cannot visit my parents for several months or something like that. But it was weird because it was kind of paradox because it was so close, and I knew many people that have lived in Munich and some that do live in Munich, but none of my schoolmates would move there. So I was kind of the only one moving there at that time. And I was like, yeah, let's just enroll for German language studies, go to university, see what happens, meet some people.
That was your first major, was German language studies? Oh, okay. So you were interesting. So you were actually going to study German before you went into broadcasting.
Yeah.
Oh man, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I started that, and I thought, yeah, this will be cool. University and stuff, meeting new people, and it's a big city. Obviously, you got to meet people. But actually,
yeah, it's a big switch. I've never,
regarding the situation from my point of view now, I've never been that lonely in my life like I've been in my within my first five or six months in Munich. Yeah,
really?
Because I didn't totally find any connection.
yeah. I think that's the same whenever anyone moves from, you know, the town that they grew up in. It could be a small town or a big town or something, but when you have, you know everybody, you're really, you know, you're close or whatever with your family, or you're around your family a lot, and you have this sort of foundation and this comfort and this familiarity with where things are, and you don't even have to think about, you know, when you're driving down a street, you just know based on, I don't know, like such simple cues and codes where your next left and next right turn are, and everything's just smooth and really comfortable. And I had two pretty huge moves in my life, and I'd say one was from my very small town in Mississippi to New Orleans. That was a big change, and I was a bit luckier about finding friends and connections there than it seems like you did, just because New Orleans is just a very family, community-based city, and as soon as I was there, I started my university, and it was at a film school with a music department, and everyone just included other people pretty quickly, and it didn't take long before I was... And I was also staying in a dorm situation at the university with people who were, you know, even if they didn't stay really close friends, they were very friendly, and we had cool times together, and it ended up, you know, I was meeting them, and it led to meeting other people that became closer friends. So that was definitely an easier transition. But then from America to Germany is where I completely connect with you and can see that point 100%, because you know, I moved here, and you know, I didn't have a foundation even of language anymore. There was no sense of where was north or south, or you know, where the town, like where the hip part was or where the young part was or anything. Like, I had no bearing. I just knew my street. I really just knew my street for the first few months. And I remember like taking the underground train and asking people that I was with, like, how many more stops until this? How many more stops until now? I just didn't have a sense of like, oh, I'm here, so three stops, easy. You know, like I had no sense of how long things were taking. And it just took me so long to make friends, man. I was drinking beer like every night, trying to go to like open mics. I was playing a lot of small club, you know, free shows, just trying to meet musicians. And eventually that led to me meeting our drummer, Mark. He was one of the first friends I ever had here. But it was just a crazy time. So I can totally connect with that feeling, like having this huge gap once you first get to a new city. But thankfully, that changed, you know. So how did it change for you? Like, who were your first friends? Or did you also have a friend group that led to other people that you were closer to?
I'll get to that in a second, but first of all, it had a lot to do with expectations, because like you mentioned in New Orleans at college or university, this whole dorm situation, the whole community situation is something completely different from universities in Germany. No single student lives on campus sites. You don't have the whole sports thing or bands or whatever creates a kind of community. Of course, you have those student houses where there are dorms, but they're not directly connected to what you're studying or what university. There's three in Munich. Where do you study? So it's more loose, and you got to find your own thing. And I didn't really expect it. I was naive. I got to admit. And that,
hey, everybody is around.
And
that time.
That was the issue. And I actually hated Munich. That's what I did. And then that's a really funny story. And I I don't think I did tell them to that many people. So I was in Munich, was hating it there from Monday till Friday. Then I was riding home back to Oberstdorf and was like, yeah, let's get back to my life and meet my friends. Reality was most of them were studying in, I don't know, Berlin, Hamburg, Vienna, wherever.
Right.
So it was a pretty desperate time. And then at some point I was so desperate that I connected with some people I didn't know before, kind of blind date, through the, do you know the app Yodel?
I don't know that one. What is that?
Anonymous version of Twitter that used to be a big thing in Germany 4 to 5 years ago.
How does it work?
It's basically imagine it like Twitter, but people being more honest and telling more personal stories because it's anonymous. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Reddit.
Yeah, something between Reddit and Twitter, maybe.
Okay.
But without any chat options, so everything you type is public.
Oh shit! Okay, wow.
And there was a group of two people who were like, "Yeah, we want to meet new people for going out because we're new in Munich and we don't know where to go, what bars, etc." And I was reading it and was like, no, you're never going to do that kind of bullshit. And then I was like, yeah, but I don't know any people. And then I was at university anyway, and they were like, yeah, let's meet in front of the LMU university. You know where there's this big fountain in front of the university?
Right, yeah.
Let's meet there at, I don't know, 6:30. And I had classes until, I don't know, 6:15. And so I was like, okay, let's just walk by there incognito and see if there are cool people. And if yes, join them. If not, go home. And actually, I've met with them.
Okay, that's a fair trade.
And somehow, I don't know the details, but somehow I've connected with a few of them. And it was like, we were building a group that met once a week from this point on. That was pretty cool. But I really felt that I could be at home and feel at home at this place, Munich, which was still strange for me, after I started at M94.5 and made friends there.
Crazy. Man, I didn't know that it took so long, actually. But it makes sense. It does make sense. I think it's very easy to hate a new place, like even if it's a perfectly unhateable city. You can just hate it because you don't feel comfortable, you know? It was funny, though. One of my first experiences in New Orleans that I remember so vividly was there was like a group of people that I was becoming close with, and I was at their house. So in New Orleans, at the University of New Orleans, across the street in front of the school, and I can't believe I'm blanking on Lakeshore Drive. Yes. So across the street from Lakeshore Drive is basically what you could imagine to be like a student's suburb in a way. So you have a normal looking suburb. The houses are a bit cheaper looking. There's like one section that's more expensive that's connected to the school somehow. It was, there's two or three different ones like that, like privateer place was one apartment complex if you wanted to feel like you're living in an apartment. But those were just more expensive, and they also were kind of pieces of shit. So you were better off either living in the dorm or living in a house with your friends and like paying your own rent that way. And there was one person I was getting closer with, and they had a house in these streets across from the school. So one evening, I remember I walked out of the dorm across the street and went to their house, and it was like a normal college party. It wasn't like a big thing. I think it was like a weekday situation. We were just, they had an upstairs and a downstairs. So it was just maybe, I don't know, 8 or 10 people just hanging out. They were all musicians, or they were all, you know, trying to decide what they wanted to do with their lives. Everyone was either, you know, pretty philosophical, if I can say that, because that's a very college perspective, at least in America, to be like, oh, I'm thinking deeper about how my life is meant to float wildly amongst those and graze the flowers of time. You know, it's just kind of a very easy mindset. So there was a few hippie people there, and like a very good time, though. Very lovely people, and I'm very thankful for all this experience, but very easy to make fun of in retrospect. And there was a guy there who was always like the weed guy, and just comparing like first experiences. And the back part of the house, they had like a small staircase, and then they had some a yard, like a grassy area. And next to the stairs, before you went outside, there was a very small room with a little sofa. And a few of us were just sitting there with that door open, getting some fresh air and just smoking and drinking some beers. And I remember this one friend loaded up his bowl, and he gave me the pipe. And I had smoked weed before, obviously, but I guess I just wasn't used to pot in this city, or this amount, or this strain, or, you know, college smoking is kind of like a whole new thing. If you're going to get into it, it's like a whole lifestyle kind of. And these guys, they gave me this pipe, and I hit this bowl and
immediately passed out.
My God, man. My God. You remember that story you told on the last one about you hit the hookah with the vodka weed inside? Okay, so I didn't pass out, but oh my God, I wish I would have. I wish I could have just slept it right off. I remember being so, so crazy high. So high that I had to, I kept apologizing to everybody because I couldn't talk anymore. And that's the thing. I'm very thankful for them, because they were really cool about it. They're like, no problem, man.
And I haven't talked.
I laid down
years.
On a sofa. Yeah. They're talking, but with their brains, like they're telekinetically speaking to me. We don't talk here. And I laid down on someone's sofa, and I remember I stared at the ceiling, and I was just rubbing my tongue across my top teeth, and in my it was so, like, the sensation was so crazy for me that I was closing my eyes, and I was picturing that my tongue was like this giant sea creature rising out of a stormy ocean, and like the clouds above me, instead of being like really translucent and easy to pass through, they were kind of like rock or stone, kind of like mountain, and the sea monster was like rising up out of the ocean and like slamming all these rocks above my head. And I'll just never forget that feeling of, and that I still have that picture in my head when I think about that time. And it's such a crazy feeling of like being so beyond your control stoned that licking your teeth feels like that. And yeah, I stuck with those guys. I stuck with those guys for a while.
Did you talk to them?
I was pretty
ever.
Well, I stayed pretty close with those guys for the majority of my college years, I'd say. And then I found like a group connected to them that I found myself even closer to, and that became some of the people from the band Big Lemois that I was in. So these people led to me being in that band. So very, very thankful for that time. But it was a really a lot of weed.
But coming back to living situations, because I told you,
right,
I have not experienced this the student dorm stuff, etc. But I was living in a house in Lyme. I had a very, very, very one room flat there in Lyme. Do you know Lyme at the Western Munich?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there it was no student dorm, but it was somehow it was super small flats for people who basically couldn't afford living in Munich. So students.
Like assisted living.
No. It's just like, it's very cheap. It's four floors, and in each floor there used to be two flats the size of your flat in Munich, maybe. And they split it, those two flats, each floor, into four separate rooms. And in this room, it was like, mine had like 13 square meters or something. But you had a little kitchen within it, and you would share the bathroom and the toilet was separate with three other people. And they was living like poor people, like students. I don't know.
That sounds really
unemployed
hard,
people.
Or it just sounds really frustrating.
And guest workers from Eastern Europe and stuff. And I don't want to bring up too much cliches, but I've lived through a lot of shit. And shit, by shit, I mean literal shit. The girl living next door shitted in the fucking shower several times.
More than once?
I was so happy when I finally found another flat and could move out of it. There was so many crazy...
Wait. She shit in the tub, yeah. And then no one kicked her out, and then she did it more than the one time she did it again?
Yeah, and at the point I was...
What do you say to her?
At the point, she was like self-isolating herself. And around the time I was moving out, because I finally found a cool shared flat where I still live today. She should have been legally kicked out. But she, at this point in her, for her room, she changed the lock at her the door of her room, so the landlord couldn't get in. And I think actually in the end they broke the door to get her out. Super weird situation. And those tiny rooms, and I haven't cooked anything with garlic or onions in those 2 years I lived there, because I just wouldn't dare, because afterwards my whole bed sheets would smell after, because your bed is like half a meter away from your kitchen. That's also why I've never invited people to my place. Never.
Come on. Yeah, sure. I totally know that feeling.
I guess the only person who's been there a few times has been my ex-girlfriend, but I never invited anyone else to visit me there, because it was just such a shitty place. And it was not only poop in the bathroom, but in the room next to mine. At some point, there lived, I don't know, it was changing like every week. At first, there lived a guy who was also a student who was cool. I was sharing the Wi-Fi with him, but we were cool, but we didn't have a deeper connection. And then at some point, he had a semester abroad and rented the room to his uncle or something. And his uncle was a guest worker from Romania, I guess. And from that point on, there used to live eight people in a room of 11 or 13 square meters. In some weeks. Sometimes it would be only two, but sometimes it would be like eight people, literally eight people. And I had a very small part of a balcony, and those guys were having barbecues on their tiny part of the balcony, and afterwards were throwing their trash on my side of the balcony. So
there were only
shitty things happening in this flat. And it was also a huge factor why I didn't feel well in Munich and didn't feel at home and hated the city, because I had no friends, no social connections to anyone besides my professors at university or something. And the shitty living situation, it was tough. And I And also, I got to a point that something that changed after I moved to my new flat, because I never spent time in my room there when I didn't have to. So I was only there to sleep, basically.
Yeah, of course. It sounds like a shithole.
And that's the only advantage I took of the situation, because I explored big parts of the city very, very fast, because I just didn't want to hang out at home.
Dude, I mean, that makes complete sense to me. It makes complete sense to me that you would have hated being there, that it would have connected to your feelings about the whole city. I mean, no question, man. No question. That makes total sense. Yeah, I guess, yeah, both times, I guess I was more lucky with my first experiences, because, I mean, thankfully, when I was here, it was for a very lovely lady, and we had our own apartment. We shared it with a monster, but we got out of there pretty quickly, and I didn't have to see the roommate too often, and it was still all fine and good. But, man, I'm so sorry. That's so crazy.
But was that the flat?
So, after you got this...
Was that the flat in Tegernseer Landstraße, or one before that?
That's right. Yeah, that was a cool flat. I really liked that apartment. It had really nice sunlight. It felt very, like, as an American, it felt very European, that apartment. The one that I'm in now feels like it could be in any country. Like, if it wasn't for the windows and the doors and the metric system, it wouldn't be, like, very technically German looking, I guess. Because it's kind of a more modern place and it's a bit bigger. But the other apartment for me was, like, so tastefully European, if that makes sense. Like, the bathroom was really uncomfortable, but it was really cute and, like, kind of attractive in a Wes Anderson way.
The bathtub was pretty attractive to me, always.
Yeah, I'd say so. He had a very nice little connection to that bathtub. He took a shit in it. I'm kidding. But, like, the whole, you know, like, the way the kitchen was built and our bedroom and the upstairs part was all very cool and very well designed, and I really liked that place. I just wish I wouldn't have even have minded leaving that building if it wasn't for the roommate that we had to get away from, but that's a whole different story. But, like, after you were back at, you were working at M94.5, you know, what was the first, like, experience? You know, you had just gotten out of that shitty place, you're in a new apartment now, you're at the new job. You know, what was the first moment where you're like, I don't know if you're sitting with a beer at the river or something. What was your first experience where you were like, you know what? I think I'm really going to vibe with this city. I think this is going to be totally the place for me.
So you gotta split that. I moved out of this shitty flat after my first year at 94.5. So
you had already been there for a year.
So it didn't happen around the same time. But regarding this one moment, I think it was kind of what you described with a beer at the riverside. And it was a really hot summer day, I guess. And we were jumping into the river, and it was, I guess a month or something after I started at 94.5 and made some friends there pretty fast, pretty quick. And been there with two or three of them, and that was the point, because of the people, because I knew most of the parts of Munich where they would take me and stuff they would do before, but just from another point of view, and those people showed me that you can actually live and enjoy this place and do fun stuff, and you'll find cool bars. You have a lot of green areas. I mean, the Englischer Garten in Munich is the biggest park within a city worldwide. So you can hang out there in the summer or whatever, and you'll find all the spots you could like, and you definitely can fall in love with the city. It just took me a long time because I didn't have the people around me to show me from that point of view. And by that, I mean people who were in a comparable situation to mine. I knew people that lived in Munich and that enjoyed it there, but those were people in a completely different at a completely different point in life.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think for a lot of people who come to Munich who aren't born and raised here, they're probably one of their better first experiences is at the river. You know, because if it wasn't for this long river cutting through the heart of it, I don't know that Munich would even be the same city. You know what I mean? It's such a like a gravitational place. It just pulls everybody in towards it. Like, I don't know if it's this inherent desire to be near fresh water or if it's just because it's very pretty and very well, everything's very well designed around it and stuff. It's very picturesque, but yeah, I mean, starting from around now, you know, April or May until maybe end of September or so, it's going to be the hot spot for anybody living in Munich. And hopefully the restrictions on Corona don't hold that back for too much longer. Maybe, you know, who knows really? I mean, all major events are closed end of July as of now, but we'll see.
You know what we should do? I'll grab two of those tiny recording devices and we'll record an episode the first time we can go out again and have a beer at the riverside. What you say about this?
That's a great idea. That's a really great idea. Yeah, let's do that. Maybe, hopefully it's this summer sometime and not next year.
I hope we can do it this summer.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, me too. That's a good idea. We can like really give a nice sound, you know, like a soundscape of what it actually is like to be out there. But I think for me really too, that was one of the first places where I connected to it as a city. Because once you're there, you know, where my place is located, if you're sitting at the river, you're between these two pretty popular bridges. And so you see the traffic going over these nice bridges and you see this giant church in the distance. And like Mo said, it's very green and, you know, it's really like long, full stretches of grass and plenty of space for everybody. And you hear dogs barking and you hear bicycle bells. And there's just a really cool little kiosk right next to one of the really popular bridges. And, you know, you can get really cheap beer there. And one of my favorite things about the city is kind of how there's kind of this unspoken agreement between the homeless and the non-homeless. How, you know, they have like their own little business where you can just leave all of your bottles and cans.
Because the deposit.
They pick it up. And often, the cool thing is often a lot of people will come up with a cooler of fresh cold beers and be like, hey, are you done with that bottle? Do you want a new one? And like bring this service up to you. That's for me, that was, I'd never seen that before. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, and then any other city I have experienced when you, I don't know, you're on your way with some friends and you want to have some beers, but there are more people to come. So you're like, okay, let's get a case of beer. Like, there's 20 inside of it. And in any other city I've been, it's like, boah, shit, but we have to carry it around all the time. And what do we do with the empty case and the empty bottles? In Munich, you just grab a case of beer, go to the riverside, put the case in the river to cool it, drink it. And afterwards, you can leave it where it is. Or if you're cool, bring it to the next guy who's picking it up for the deposit. And that's the for me the best working economic system within Europe.
Yes, that's actually a very functional, relaxed business that just works great for everybody. I mean, I had never seen that before either, like putting the case of beer like, you know, between a collection of rocks in the flowing river, and it's this constant cold moving water. Yeah. It's so cool. The beer stays fresh and cold potentially forever.
By the way, for all the people who wonder, okay, how could you swim within the river in the middle of the city? It's a very cold water and it runs pretty fast, so it's very clean because all of the dirt flows away. And you don't have any issues. So I wouldn't recommend, I don't know, jumping into the Hudson River or some other big city rivers. But in Munich, you can do it, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, that's maybe another a huge point that I might have missed in talking about why it's so gravitational. But yeah, you can swim in it, and a lot of people do, and it's wonderful. And do you know if the near the Fraunhoferstrasse, this island in the middle, is that man-made?
I don't know.
That would be something interesting to know for the next episode to research. But there's this really cool island between these two bridges near my house that people often swim to it. There's they can have picnics there. They can put like rope swings and jump off of it back into the river. And that's really cool. And there's a good spot there near the island where you can jump right in, and it's pretty deep. I'd say like 2 meters deep, and swim like with the water pretty far. And then when you get past that island, the water thins up to about ankle depth, and you can just step up and walk back out to where you were. And that's really cool. That's really refreshing. If you're on a really, really hot summer day, and you're getting kind of drunk and you're getting kind of sunburned and you just really want to refresh yourself, just jump in head first, splash, go all the way down, and then float, I don't know, 30 seconds or a minute further down, and then get up and walk back to where you were. And it's just like waking up completely new. Like, wow.
Yeah, but since we're responsible podcasters, to all the kids out there, don't drink and swim.
Yeah, well, of course. But I didn't mean at the same time.
But by the way, it's a pity. I can understand it from an environmental point, but that they restricted the whole thing with the inflatable boats. Have you ever done this?
I haven't done it, but I know about it. Tell them what it is, and then tell me why they restricted.
So
it,
you can. It's a thing a lot of younger people would do. They would get an inflatable boat and maybe a second inflatable unit, I don't know, like the swimming rings or whatever, for a case of beer. Then take the S-Bahn out of the city, like 20 kilometers away. Then get in the boat, get a case of beer in the little ring, adjust it to the boat, and let yourself flow until you're back in the city. And Dave.
Yeah, it sounds. I mean, it's, in theory, it sounds like an amazing summer day.
And are you still allowed to ride in boats on the river? But they restricted the areas because of at some locations, because there are special fish breeding or whatever. So that's, you can understand that. But you would also see very funny things happening on those boats. Last summer, I saw a canoe flowing past Fraunhofer Bridge, and in there was sitting like of a kind of a gypsy music trio with a banjo, I don't know the instrument, accordion,
the accordion,
and a fucking upright bass in a canoe.
Oh, no way, man! That's so cool.
From the rear end of the boat until the middle, and the guy was playing it like this, and they were making awesome sound. I was like, don't they fear that the fucking bass drowns into this river? But you see,
oh man, I would be terrified.
You see many spectacular things happen there. But one thing I've always been jealous about, or I've been jealous on you, is the spots where you have lived yet in Munich. Because both of your flats are in the flats you lived in.
You're jealous of the. You're jealous of the two places I've lived so
are
far.
Are in great locations. Okay.
That's true. It's been very lucky. Oh, like the old apartment that I moved into when I first came here was all like this chain of events over years. Like, you know, Efi's brother lived there when he was in college, like 10 years ago, and then it was given to their cousin. And then he went to school there. And then when he moved out, I think someone else lived there that was connected to them. And then Efi lived there after she came back from America. And then she stayed there until I came. And then she had so many issues with this other roommate that we got out of there. And honestly, I feel even more lucky to be here because now it's just our place.
It's an amazing flat.
You know, we're so lucky. You know, it's all. It's for me, it's a great location. Yeah, you can just, like earlier today, I just went for a walk literally to the river that we're talking about because, you know, they allow you to walk on your own or with someone you're living with. And I just walked down there and just got a little sunlight, some fresh air, came back. And, you know, that's just like a 5 or maybe even less, like 10 minutes less or so walk or something. It's so we're super lucky with how everything is organized here with the location. So yeah, for sure. For sure. There's definitely, you know, the further outskirts of Munich that could feel like any city. And, you know, they kind of even remind me of like some Eastern European cities. They're not, you know, it's all modern. It's like post-70s yeah. architecture. And it's really flat and gray and square. And that's a lot of stuff I've seen before. When I first visited Munich, we lived at Olympia Einkaufszentrum.
Oh, that's next to my place.
Yeah. And next to that BMW museum is a stretch of like college communal housing, yeah. like for athletes. And we were in there, and it's a real dump.
Ah, you lived in the Olympiadorf. It's the Olympic village. So at every Olympic Games, the city it's in has to build this kind of village where all the athletes live. And those...
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we stay... Yeah.
Those are the remainings of the Olympic Games in Munich in 72.
72, yeah. That's it. So it's kind of cool to like... See, I mean, the architecture of the arena, the Olympic arena, is breathtaking, yeah. and it's super, super unique.
And the whole
unique.
Park is pretty cool.
But the apartment, yeah.
The Olympic Park.
The park is cool, yeah. There's like a water world and stuff, like a aquarium and stuff. There was cool things to do, and, you know, it wasn't the worst situation for sure, but the apartment itself was extremely small and was definitely made for yeah. one person.
I know these kind of apartments.
The good thing is now that... Yeah, it just wasn't meant for two people, especially one person who's trying to, you know, live abroad and like explore a city. Yeah. It was like, where the fuck are we? Why does it seem like everything is a parking lot? It has to be like certain neighborhoods.
But that's something I want to hear more about, because we have, even off mic, we've never talked about it. Your first visit to Munich.
The very, very first one... let me just quickly pee and then I'll come back
That's
and tell
cool.
that story.
I gotta do the same thing.
All right. You know what I think we should do? What I think we should do is in that gap, I mean, we can shorten the gap, of course, but put like a little jingle, like a we'll be right back jingle.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Oh, man. That was necessary.
And we were back at the exact same second.
We're true P-pals. But yeah, you asked about my first experience in Munich ever. So I think, and this was part of kind of a big European trip, and it was my first experience to see basically anything outside of America ever. And so I was, you know, I saw, it was a really lucky trip. I got to see Germany, Austria, Switzerland, France, and Spain. And I might be wrong, but I think even part of Italy, but I think I might be wrong about the Italy part. But anyway, it was a really nice journey through Central Europe and like seeing some really cool cities and like the farmlands and just being so astounded by how pretty it all was, and just a classic like American in college goes to Europe sort of situation.
Did you already finish college at that time?
No, I was still there. I think I still had 1.5 or 2 more years to go. So this was just a big summer break, and I maxed out a credit card and just came to Europe. And it was great. It was a really amazing experience. And I think I saw this apartment, this Olympia Einkaufszentrum apartment, then on that trip, but not for very long. So I didn't think too much about it. I think I was there, I looked out, and, you know, I had the most I ever really knew about Munich was from this Steven Spielberg movie, Munich. So I just remember, you know, looking at the Olympic Arena and thinking about the terrorism from the 70s during the Olympics, then being like, oh my God, that, you know, that happened right there. And oh, that happened over there, and being kind of shocked by it. And I think we, of course, went through like the Marienplatz and saw, you know, like the nice old architecture and the statues and the fountains, and I saw the river and stuff. But for me, honestly, that whole first experience blends into itself because I was just in this innocent, wide-eyed stage of astonishment at the entire experience. You know, the whole thing was one drunken, you know, stumbling sort of, my jaw was agape and I was dragging my feet sort of thing. You know, the whole time was really, really, really fun and really cool. So the first real Munich experience was just part of this whole big tourism thing. But there was a second trip before I moved. I think it was it must have been Christmas 2014. Yes. I visited again to concrete the idea that I would be moving here and to solidify any sort of confusion between, you know, me and Ethi and about the plan and everything. And that's when, for like a week, we stayed in this Olympia apartment. And man, yeah, for, you know, she was living there for a real short time, and then she went to this other place. And that was where I had some doubts, like, oh man, this feels like such a weird city. Because, I mean, I was coming right out of New Orleans in this great location, and everything is all like, you know, you have this community feeling, and it was all colorful and eventful, and I had these bands and everything was kind of like popping and like, you know, fresh. And then I go to Munich and I'm one side of me is this empty stadium, and the other part is, you know, it felt like kind of empty, and like all the buildings right there are kind of gray. And I think on your side of it, it's much better, but I didn't get to see that side until like years later, where you get to see like some greenery and like some cool things. But yeah, the last time that we picked you up for a concert, I had never even seen that part of the area before.
Yeah, that's a cool area. And the thing about that is that it's been an own little town until, I don't know, 30 years ago. And you still can feel that at some points. So it has its kind of own vibe. And that's also cool. And you got a cool things there. But I know a lot of those in-between places, in between those different parts of the city where social life happens, or I don't know, a certain economic life happens or whatever, those parts in between can be pretty rough and also pretty, pretty ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like those outskirts, you know, it's always the flip of a coin, which part you go to that looks better than the other one. But that was probably my first real experience was that Christmas time, that week where I really absorbed the city and tried to kind of gauge how big it was and what the population was and what it was going to be like. But even still at that time, I was so naive. I never really, I think until like 2016 or something, after already having lived there for almost a year, it didn't really hit me that I had moved away, that I had moved abroad. So,
wait, did you move here in 14 or in 15?
2015.
Ah, I guess.
Oh, so this would be the fifth year then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was true, August. Because we played our first, we got to know each other in 2015 at our first concert.
That's right. Yeah, August 2015. So we played that festival at Gruben Grooves, yeah.
After you finished university, or what was the story?
So she was ahead of me, and then was kind of waiting here, and then when I moved in, officially, we moved to this Tegernsee Landstrasse apartment. And Yeah, this, and it was like not even until way later that I really considered like, oh, I'm living here now. And so the first, you know, the first trips and the first year and stuff was all kind of this hazy, you know, innocent, really naive time where I probably frustrated Ify beyond imagination with she had to handle everything and take care of so much. And I probably owe her a lot of money and a lot of sweet time.
I love the way.
But yeah, it was really.
Said again that we're not a. We don't offer a video podcast. I love the way you looked over your shoulder where the door to your bedroom is while you said this.
It's like, eh, I don't want to get in trouble, but she did a lot. She did everything. So, but yeah, that first experience, even that first year was all really, really hazy for me. But everything's cool now. I mean, now it's all settled. Now we have this great place, and I really love the location, and I'm just looking forward for, you know, COVID to mosey on back to whatever cave it crawled out of and let us enjoy the river.
Some bat cave.
Some bat cave somewhere. Fucking Batman. It's all Batman's fault.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think probably I'll leave you with that because I'm gonna try and do some house cleaning before dinner time. But
before Ify comes home,
yeah,
and confronts
exactly.
You with all the stuff she did for you.
She's in like, the by last the way, you wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for me.
Like, I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
and
no.
That's cool because I already thought about ending this shit because I'm pretty hungry.
Yeah, dude. It's and the cool thing is you're still able to release this evening. Is that still possible?
Yes, I'll do.
All right. So that's actually pretty cool for you guys. We're recording and releasing on the same day, so it's real fresh, right into your ears, right from the source.
Yeah, fresher than Carol fucking Baskin's ex-husband.
It's more fresh than Carol Baskin's meat grinder. As always, guys, we just wanted to say thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed today's show, please go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please give us a good review or a good rating. Or even just telling a friend about the show goes a really long way in supporting small shows like us. So thank you so much. And Yamo, thanks for your time. And I guess we'll talk next week. So thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.